Shmuel Beis, Perek Chof Gimel. We finished basically the story of David HaMelech's life, and we had the Shira, the song that he sang. There are two prokim left. The Mirtz Hashem will do Perek Chof Gimel today, and Chof Dalid next week. These are the words of David, his last message, the last words that he spoke. And before we get in to see what he says, there's a major discussion among the Mefarshim. What does it mean these are his last words? For instance, we know David HaMelech had a message he delivered to his son in the beginning of Sefer Melachim. Before he was Nifter, he told his son Shlomo HaMelech what he should do, his last will and testament. What is the significance of these being the last words of David? Ve'ele divrei David ha'achronim. These are the last words of David. Rashi and the Targum learned that these are words that David said as a nevuah, a prophecy for what would be in the future. And it deals with what things will be like under Mashiach. Mashiach is going to be a Ben David, a descendant of David HaMelech. His monarchy will reach its full glory when Mashiach comes. And these are his last words referring to that time period. The first words of David were the Shira, as Rashi mentions. We just had the song of David, which we explained that David HaMelech said many songs. We have the whole Sefer Tehillim. But there was one song that he carried with him through life, through all of the ups and downs, and every time that he was victorious over his enemies, he sang the Shira in Perek Chof Beis, B'yom Hitzel Hashem Oso, and Hashem saved him from his enemies and from Sheol. He had that song. That was Perek Chof Beis, the song of what happened in the past. Those were the first words of David. These are the last words. This is a nevuah for the future. The Abarbanel is bothered that if this is a nevuah of David, it should say something like, Vayedaber Hashem el David, Hashem spoke to David the following words of prophecy. Or, Hadavar Asher Hoyel David, the word that came to David. Here it seems to be David's own words. Not that it's a prophecy, not that it's words given to him as a message by God. It's not from Hashem, it's words of its own words. Other Rishonim, the Radak and the Ralbag learn, Eile Divrei David HaAchronim, these are the last words, these are words of Shavach and Hoda'ah, praise to Hashem, and thanks that David HaMelech is thanking that he became king. Before he had the Shir, and of course we have the whole Tehillim where he thanks Hashem for many different things. But now he's focusing at the end of Sefer Shmuel to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he has the merit to become the patriarch, the first of Malchus Beis David. That's also the Ramban is, the Abarbanel is bothered, because it should say Mizmor LeDavid or a Shira for David. If this is a song of thanks to Hashem, and why isn't it written in Tehillim? It's here at the end of Shmuel. The Abarbanel learns that these are not words of Nevuah because David HaMelech was not a Navi. The Rambam mentions that in Mor Nevuchim, and as we mentioned, it doesn't say these are words from Hashem of prophecy. These are also not special words of praise to Hashem for becoming the king. This is David HaMelech. It's like Lahavdil, to compare it to somebody who writes a book, and in the jacket or an epilogue or somewhere he writes afterwards a little bit about the author. David HaMelech wrote a whole Tehillim. And you're wondering, who is the one who wrote Tehillim? What's the nature of the author? What type of a person was he? We're going to study Tehillim. We beg Hashem for Rachmanis, and we dive into Hashem. We use Tehillim for every emotion that we have. Who is the one who wrote Tehillim? What was the nature of the person? Ve'ele divrei David ha'achronim. These are the last words of David, where David is going to encapsulize what about himself and about his view, what Hashem has done for him, what's going to be his outlook on the Rishayim and on the wicked. In a few verses, he's going to tell you who he is and therefore why he is the one who is worthy of writing Sefer Tehillim. Ne'um David ben Yishai. It's the words of David, who was the son of Yishai. At that point, he was a simple person. David, no titles. David, the son of Yishai. It happens to be that Yishai was a perfect individual. The Gemara says he didn't have any averus. He was perfect. He had a father like Yishai. And he himself was David. But he had a life as a shepherd, as a simple person. Unu'um ha-gever, it's also the words of a person who come all, that was established on high. HaKadosh Baruch Hu took him from being a shepherd and put him the leader of the nation. That's the one who's speaking it to him. Mashiach Elokei Yaakov, he's the anointed one from the God of Yaakov. Some say you didn't want to use the term Yisrael because the Malchus split up shortly afterwards into Malchus Yehuda and Malchus Yisrael. Elokei Yaakov could be referring to the whole Jewish people, so I use the term Yaakov that refers to everyone. But he was anointed by the Elokei Yaakov, the one who supervised, the Elohim, the judge, the supervisor, the one who has all the power, and he's the Elokei Yaakov, chose David to be the leader. But besides that, besides his rags to riches, besides the fact that he was a David ben Yishai, he was also the person who was on top. He's also Ne'im Zemiros Yisrael, the pleasant singer, the pleasant one of the songs of Yisrael. And that's indeed very rare. Very often you have a coarse, rough person who is a fighter and a winner, but he doesn't have the appreciation of beauty, of song, he doesn't have the emotions, the delicate sensitivity to express in words all of the thoughts and feelings that a person could have and should have toward Hashem. David HaMelech had both. He could be the person who was the shepherd, he could be the person who was on top of everything, and besides that, he was the Ne'im Zemiros Yisrael. That's the person who wrote the Tehillim. These are his last words, to know who he is. The Gemara, in fact, learns, Ne'um ha-gever hukam ol, the words of a person, hukam, who is established ol on top. Ol is like from the word to'elis. Ol means he established that there's a benefit, there's something that David HaMelech taught us, that you might not have realized the benefit of it. And in the month of Elul, it's especially appropriate. David HaMelech taught us something that you don't see, certainly not to the extent of David HaMelech, you don't see by anyone else beforehand. David HaMelech made a terrible mistake with Bathsheba, which we've discussed at length without going into the whole discussion. But he is the example, whatever that mistake was, you can imagine somebody that people would have thought was the Gadol HaDor and was the greatest tzaddik, and he made a blunder and a mistake that would destroy his life. And most people would just probably go off the derech after such an experience, because everyone looked at him and there were people, the greatest people of the country, called him the worst names, an idolater, and the Gemara says in Shabbos, all the names that they called him, a klala nimretzus, they gave him an explicit curse, and they spelled out everything that he did wrong. And David HaMelech was able to take that and do such a tshuva as he discusses in Tehillim. We mention in Tachanun how he mentions how he soaked his bed with his tears. And David HaMelech did such a tremendous tshuva that he came out with a perfection that he never would have had otherwise. And in fact, Chazal say he didn't have the Siyata Dishmaya, and there was the events were worked in a certain way that he was almost led to make this mistake. It was a whole bizarre incident, the whole idea that he should see Bathsheba on the roof. The Gemara has a discussion how the Yetzihara came and he shot an arrow and she was exposed. The whole thing was, he didn't have Siyata Dishmaya. Hashem wanted him almost to make this mistake, to be able to grow from it and to be a lesson. And the Gemara says in Avodah Zarah, Daf Hey, that if a person says, you know, his life, you know, he's just made so many mistakes, it just, he can't correct himself. The Gemara says any individual who says that, look at David HaMelech. What David HaMelech is blamed for, and again, there's two ways of understanding it. The mistake really wasn't a mistake, just he was blamed for it. On the other hand, he's treated as if the mistake would be the worst mistake for his level. It would be like anybody else who actually sinned with a married woman. And it was treated with the greatest severity. And yet he was able to pick his life up and continue and become and write it to Tehillim and develop a perfection that he's together with the Avos, with Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov on the highest madrigas. Ne'um ha'gever hukam ol. He established all the benefit, the to'elis, that there is in doing tshuva. That's also the person who wrote the Tehillim. All of these things David HaMelech had. Ruach Hashem diber bi. The Spirit of Hashem spoke in me. Umilotso alishoni, and his words are on my tongue. Again, the Abarbanel learns it means that he wasn't a Novi. He had Ruach HaKodesh. There was the Spirit of Hashem in him. But it wasn't just the divine inspiration. The words of Tehillim are actually Milosi al-Lashoni. The words were Hashem gave him this special Ruach HaKodesh and Siyata Dishmaya, that those words are the words that Hashem wanted to be said. And David HaMelech was Zoche, he merited that. He was the conduit by which we're given these words. And therefore the power of Tehillim, when you want to daven, if you can find that chapter in Tehillim that is the mood and the situation you're in, you wouldn't be able to describe it as effectively and with the same koach as David HaMelech's words. Umilosu al-Lashoni. The words of Hashem are on my tongue. Amar Elokei Yisrael, the God of Yisrael, the God of Israel said, Li diber tzur Yisrael. And the rock, the strength of Klai Yisrael spoke to me, a message to me. And Rashi brings down the drosh of Chazal. And the drosh is Moshe Ba'odom. I, Hashem, rule over man. Li diber the Tzur Yisrael said, Moshe Ba'odom, I, as the Tzur Yisrael, I rule over men. But do you want to know something? Hashem doesn't have the final word. It's a shocking Gemara. But Hashem rules over man, but he doesn't have the final word. Tzaddik, a tzaddik can be moshel, can rule over even Hashem with Yiras Elokim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Goyzer, and the tzaddik can cancel the Gezerah. Hashem says, I'm Moshel Ba'adam, I rule over man. But a tzaddik kaviyocha, as if you could say such a thing. Hashem gave the power like a tzaddik can rule over Hashem. Tzadik Moshe Yiras Elokim. That's the drosh of Chazal. Poshup Shad is, Hashem told him, Moshe Ba'adam, David HaMelech, your job, your responsibility in life is to be a Moshe over man. I would just add, this is my own note, but the Malbim has mentioned elsewhere in Tanakh, a Melech is somebody that the people accept. A moshel, a despot, or somebody that is somebody who rules, a tyrant who rules against people's will. For instance, Ki Lashem HaMelucha. Hashem has the Malchus, right? On Rosh Hashanah, we all willingly accept, we always accept daily, we're Mekabel Ol Malchus Shamayim. We accept Hashem's kingship, especially Yom Noroim. But year-round, we accept Hashem as Melech. Umoshel Bagoyim. But among the other nations, they don't want Hashem as their king. But Hashem is the Moshel among the nations. Hashem sends message from time to time. There'll be a tragedy, there'll be a hurricane, there'll be a typhoon, there'll be whatever events that show the nations of the world that there is a God and there is a Creator. And usually after these events, people wake up and they say, why did God do this? The whole time they don't think about Hashem. But he's a Moshel Bagoyim. David HaMelech had that job. He's a Moshel Ba'odom. He had to rule against people whether they like it or not. He was a Moshel. But Tzadik Moshel Yiras Elokim. But as a Tzadik who is Moshel using Yiras Elokim, he has to rule with all of his greatness. He has to realize constantly he has to be Yirei Elokim. It's almost like what the Torah says by a Melech. He's got to be a king, and a king can't forego his honor. Melech shemochal kavodo ein kavodo mochal. You can't forgive your honor. But levilti rum levovo meyechov. In his heart, the king has to be as humble as every plain, regular Jew. He can't feel haughty, which is almost, it's hard for us to imagine such a role to, on one hand, be the ruler and know it, and you can't be mochel, and everybody must treat you with the right respect, but inside you have to know you're just, it's a present from God, you're moshel, you're a selokim. You're ruling with the fear of Hashem. And the Mefarshim also point out, when moshel ba'adam tzadik, if a righteous person rules over man, moshel yiras elokim, then yiras elokim is moshel. You should know lahavdil, you see it all the time. Very often when the leader, whether it's a president, whether it's a king, if he represents decency, somehow the people is lifted up and the people behave more morally. And somehow when the leader himself is exposed to be an immoral person, it has an effect on society. It has an effect on people's attitudes. You know, as if their leader's that way, why should they even pretend to be different? When the moshel, and here we're talking, this is on a totally different level, a totally different sphere. This is talking about David HaMelech. When a tzaddik is moshel, when a tzaddik like David was the ruling, Yiras Elokim becomes the ruler of the day. People walk around their daily lives with a feeling that Hashem is their ruler. Uchor boker yizrach shomesh. And like the light of the morning, when you see those first rays of light, yizrach shomesh, and you know there's a sun coming, it's going to get stronger. Boker lo ovos, where it's a morning where you don't have clouds. It's a clear day. So you see that first light, and you realize it's going to be getting stronger. Minoga. And sometimes there's a shining mimotar from the rain. Imagine when it rains and there's dew on the ground and the grass is glistening and the sun rays hit it and you see the shine, the glint of light reflected on the blades of grass. Minoga mimotar, the shine from the rain. Desha miyaretz, and that causes the grass, the greenery, the vegetation to grow from the land. So too, Malchus Beis David. So too, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will bring about that when there's a ruler who is Moshe with Yiras Elokim, that's an understood result. Just like those first lights, rays of light herald the approach of the sun. When you have a tzaddik as the leader, Yiras Elokim follows. Other Mefarshim sometimes learn that there is the sun coming, but very often the sun is not visible because there are clouds. It could be Boker Lo Ovos, a morning without clouds, but it doesn't last forever. Minoga, there can be the shine of the sun. Mimutar, but the world needs rain also. You need the clouds. And there are clouds that block the view of the sun. Desha Meyaretz, because in order to cause the land to sprout and for things to grow, you need the light of the sun, and you need the rain that's brought by clouds. There's a balance. And normally when there's a ruler, HaKadosh Baruch Hu lets this world go on in Olam Hazeh, the way things are conducted nowadays, Hashem has His reasons why. There's a tzaddik, and very often the tzaddik has the upper hand, and Yiras Elokim seems to be the dominant force in a society. But there's a need sometimes for people to grow through the difficulties of not having such an experience. You need the rain. You need the light to be blocked out. Hashem has His cheshbonos, how things work, who the leaders are, and what their effect is on society. But kilochen beisi imkel. My house, David HaMelech says, Malchus Beis David is not going to be that way with Hashem. When he's talking about the way it's going to come with Mashiach, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to see the first rays of light, and then it means that the sun is going to rise. It can be a seventh thing. Lokhein beisim kel. My house is not that way with Hashem that it has to be a gradual thing, and sometimes it'll be blocked out by the clouds. Kivris olam samli. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made with me a bris olam, a covenant that would be forever. Aruch HaVakol. There's a bris olam. It's an eternal treaty, a covenant. It's mentioned a number of times, for instance, in Tehillim, Perek Peites. There's a number of psukim. There's a pasuk, Karati Vris Livachiri. Hashem says, I was Kores Baris. I made a treaty Livachiri with those I chose. Nishpati LeDavid Avdi. I swore to my servant, David. And there are other psukim in that mizmor where he says the same idea, La'olam eshmer lo chasti, I'll always guard my kindness with David, uvrisi nemenes lo, and my treaty nemenes will be faithful with him. I'm reading a few psukim from Tehillim Perek Peites. Zara la'olam yiyah, his children will remain forever, his household won't be cut off, v'chisok ha'shemesh negdi, his throne will be like the sun, will be a permanent part of Klal Yisrael that it doesn't, even though we don't see it now, but it's there. It may be dormant, but it's there. And it's once Mashiach comes, it will be forever. Kivris olam somli, Hashem made this bris eternally. Arucha bakol, it's arranged with everything necessary. Ushimura, and it's guarded, it's in waiting. Malchus Beis David is there. And when Mashiach comes, he'll be right behind. Kichol yishi, because all of my salvation, b'chol chefetz, whatever could be desired, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to bring out through Malchus Beis David. That'll be the success of Klal Yisrael. The success of the world will be brought in with Malchus Beis David. Kilo yatzmiach, because nothing else will sprout. There won't be any opposing government, any other opposing rulers. When Mashiach comes, it'll be Malchus Beis David. The Gemara, by the way, points out something that's totally not connected with Pashat Peshat, the simple meaning of the verse. But it's such an important concept, I want to mention it. The Gemara says in Eruvin, on Daf Nun Dalet, Arucha Bakol, it's arranged in everything. Ushmuran, it's guarded. The Gemara makes a point. The Gemara says there was somebody who was learning and he was whispering. And Bruria, the wife of Rabbi Meir, came and saw that the person was learning the Gemara, and it looked like he was, you know, just staring, you know, looking at whatever he was learning without mouthing the words. And the Gemara says she kicked him. And she said, this pasuk says, Arucha Bakol, the Torah has to be arranged in the whole person. A person's got to have a certain life when he's learning. He's got to get into it. He's got to discuss it. He's got to talk it out. Ushimura, and if a person approaches the learning that way, it'll be guarded. Obviously, when you're in a shir, you can't do that. But afterwards, you go home and you discuss it with somebody, something that you learned in the shir. If a person should get used to saying over the words of Torah, and it has a tremendous impact that the Torah will be guarded. Pasuk Vav. Uvliyal, the wicked person, kikotz munod. He's like a thorn that's kicked around, that's moved around. Kulam, all of the Rishayim, they don't have a permanence. Malchus Beis David will remain forever. And what about those other people who became a king? People like Yeravam ben Nevat, it says started the kingship of Israel against Malchus Beis David. Those people, it's not going to last. It's like a thorn. People don't pick up a thorn and carefully save it. They kick it. Kiloviyad yikochel, because they don't want to take it with their hands. Because they're afraid that they're going to hurt themselves. They get a splinter. They'll cut themselves. V'ish yigab b'ham. And if a person wants to touch that thorn, yimolei varzel, he'll put some type of metal protection on his hand. V'eitz chanis, and he'll hold it perhaps at a distance using like a spear. You know, as he won't want to touch it with his hand, he'll use some type of stick to move, to pick it up. Meaning when you're dealing with the Russia, either they're kicked around and they have no permanence, and when somebody deals with the Russia, he does so at a distance. And what happens with that thorn? Uvoation in the fire, sorof yisarfu. They're burned, bashavas where they are. They just leave them where they are, and they're burnt. and the Gemara learns out the Rishoyim have no takana, there's no way of improving them. If a person goes through this life and he's not interested in improving, and he spends his life against Hashem, so in Gehenna, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will finally give him his punishment. Bashoves, either Bashoves, wherever the thorn is sitting, wherever the thorn is situated, that's where it's destroyed. Or Rashi brings the Pshat Bashoves, when Hashem sits in judgment, Kavi Yachol, that's when the Rasha finally gets his punishment. These are the last words of David. David was aware of who he was, what the role would be for Malchus Beis David, in contrast to what would it be with the Rishoyim, and that's the one who wrote our Tehillim. Eilu Shmos HaGiborim Asher LeDavid. Now the Gemara says, the Pasuk says, these are the names of the Giborim, the mighty warriors that David had. And from now till the end of the Perek, we're going to talk about different warriors, Giborim, strong men that supported David HaMelech. The Mephorshim go in detail, because in Divrei HaYomim, in Chronicles, it also mentions the Giborim. And sometimes it mentions the same story and it gives a different name for the warrior. Sometimes the story is slightly different. It has a longer list of Giborim. There are many differences between David HaMelech's soldiers mentioned in Sefer Shmuel and what it says in Sefer Divrei HaYomim. But let's try to explain the simple meaning of these psukim. Eilu Shmos HaGiborim Asher LeDavid. These are the names of the Giborim that David HaMelech had. Yoshev Basheves, the one who would sit. Now it could be Yoshev Basheves, the simple meaning might be that's his name. He sat Basheves in council, where people are sitting, this person sat. Tach Kemoni, he was a wise person, from the word Chachma. Rosh HaSholishi, he was one of the leaders. Hu Adino Etzne. And you're wondering, who's this person? He sat in the council and he was one of the leaders. His name was Adino Etzni. Al Shmona Meos Cholol, the Pam Echos. In one time, he would be standing by 800 dead bodies. As he went out to war, he killed 800 people. And then the Pasuk continues and Pasuk tests with somebody else. Another one of David's Giboyrim. The Gemara picks up on the fact that perhaps it's not clear exactly how many Giborim are we mentioning here. We mentioned Giborim that David has. You tell me Yoshev Basheves, he sits in council, Tachkamoni, the wise one, Rosh HaSholishi. The Gemara learns out that this Pasuk is actually referring to David. We're going to give you the names of the Giborim Asher LeDavid, the strong men that David HaMelech had. David is the one who is Yoshev Basheves. David HaMelech would sit in council. Tach Kemoni, David became wise in Torah. Rosh HaSholishi, he was a leader. Hu Adino Ho'etzni, and we'll discuss this more in a moment. He was also called Adino Ho'etzni. Adino could be like, to mean soft. And etzni can be from the word eitz, like a piece of wood, which is hard. Al shmona meos chol b'pam echos. And David HaMelech could kill 800 people from the enemy in one time by himself. He could go out to battle, and he was able to defeat, kill, or at least send, rout 800 soldiers. Chol is mashma that he killed them. There was 800 in one time. The Gemara discusses this in Moed Katan on Daf Tes Zayin Amid Beis. And the Gemara says, what does it mean these are the names of the Giborim? It means we're going to single out the names of the Gevuros, all of the courageous, valiant things that David HaMelech accomplished. The first thing is Yoshev, he sat Basheves. And it was noticeable how he was sitting and where he was sitting. He sat different than the normal. Because by his Rebbe, who was Iro HaYoiri, when the Rebbe used to teach everyone, he sat on cushions and on pillows. He sat on a very chashuva, respectable chair. And he would teach the Chachamim. When David HaMelech, after he was Nifter, and David HaMelech became the king, and became the leader of Klal Yisrael, David HaMelech sat on the ground. Yoshev Bashevis, he sat al gabe karka. He sat on the ground. And the people said to him, you're teaching Torah, you should sit on a karimuch sasos, on pillows and cushions. And he refused. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu took note of the fact that David HaMelech wanted to, for Torah, kachi darka shel Torah, paspa melach tochel, you got to be willing to eat your bread with just salt. Your water's limited, valar's tishan, you got to be prepared to sleep on the ground. And David HaMelech, even though he could have had it easier, he bedafka wanted that there should be some mesiras nefesh and some difficulty. He bedafka wanted to sit on the ground while he's teaching Torah. Perhaps to help give him the anivus. There are many reasons why he could have wanted to sit on the ground. The humility of being sitting on the ground. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Hol vishpalta atzmacha, because you lowered yourself and you learnt the Torah sitting on the ground. Tach kemoni. Not just tach kemoni from the word chokhmah, you'll be wise, but tach kemoni is like tehei kemoni. You will be like me. That I'll make a gezeira, I'll make a decree, and you'll have the power to cancel it. You'll have the power to override a decree from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rosh HaSholishim, he was the head of the threesome. Meaning the Avos, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. He became the Rosh, the leader for the Gimel Avos. Meaning in Olam Haba, when you have Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, the one who's in front of them is David HaMelech. Hu Adino Ho'etzni. This is Adino, the one who is Adin, who is delicate, who is soft. And yet he was Etzni, hard like wood. When he sat and he was Isaac in Torah, when he involved himself in Torah, he made himself soft like a worm. He was bendable. You could give him a svara, and he didn't have the pride of backing up what he said. If he said something and you said it differently, if you could convince David of your position, he would immediately change. He was soft like a worm. But when he went out to war, he was hard like wood. You couldn't move him. You couldn't bend him. Al shmona meos chol b'pam echos. And one time he would be able to kill 800 of the enemy. He would shoot an arrow and 800 would die. V'hoyim misaneach. And with that, David HaMelech would groan. And he said, there's a pasuk, echad yirdof echad elef. How could one person pursue 1,000? If not that Hashem gave him the power. And David HaMelech realized that when somebody has siyata d'shmaya, really, one person should be able to defeat 1,000. There's a pasuk like that in the Torah. Echad yirdof echad elef. How could one chase 1,000? With Hashem's help, it's doable. And yet he only killed 800. A bas kol, a voice came out and it said, David HaMelech, you have that one fault of Uriah HaChiti, that incident with Bathsheba. So even though he did the tshuva, but he wasn't given the full 1,000. He wasn't given the full quota. But that's who we're dealing with. David HaMelech, Shmois HaGiboyrim, the names of all of the great deeds that David HaMelech did. His great deeds were, on one hand, he was the tremendous warrior. And on the other hand, when it came to learning, he sat on the ground. He didn't, it was with the greatest humility and deprivation and willing to sit on the ground just to understand Torah. And if it was something that he needed to learn, he was soft as a worm. But it was the same person. And this is talking when he was already teaching his Talmidim. Va'achrov, after him, he had Elazar ben Dod, who ben Anchochi. Bishlosh ha-giborim im David, he was one of the three giborim with David. It could be David HaMelech normally had three bodyguards, or three people who were normally always with him. One of them was Elazar ben Dodo. Bechor from Vaplishtim, when they blasphemed and they taunted the Plishtim. Or some learned the Plishtim taunted them. But there was some type of skirmish and the friction between them and the Plishtim. Nesu Shama Mucham, they gathered there for battle. Vayalu Ish Yisrael. And the Jewish men decided not to fight. Whatever, it wasn't a regular war. There was some type of teasing and taunting and boasting. And the Jewish people left. Vayalu Ish Yisrael, they didn't want to make a war. But at that point, there was this battle between the Plishtim, who would have the upper hand. Who come? So there was no one else. Everyone else wasn't interested in fighting. And the Plishtim, I guess, were there to see if the Jews could defend themselves. Who come? Elazar ben Dodo was the one to get up. Vayachpa Plishtim, and he struck the Plishtim, ad ki yoga yodo, until his hand got weary. Vatidbat yodo el acherev, his hand was like stuck to the sword. Sometimes a person does the same motion again and again and again. You know, a person like the typist sometimes has, like, you do the same motion again and again and again. But over here, his muscles were in the same position, wrapped around the sword. He made a fist, and it was wrapped around the handle of the sword, and he was swinging with power back and forth, and the pressure of locking his muscles around that weapon, and this must have gone on probably for hours. It was almost like he couldn't open his fist afterwards. It was like frozen in that position. His hand stuck to the sword. Some learned in general he was killing the enemy and there was blood and everything had dried on his hands. But that was the kind of battle he fought. And there was a great salvation, a great Yeshua for Klal Yisrael on that day. And then the people returned afterwards. Achlafashe, just to take the weapons and to take the spoils off of the fallen enemy soldiers. Now, when it was there for fighting, Elazar ben Dodo had to do it by himself. But now there were all this, the spoils of war, then everybody came back and they helped themselves. But Elazar ben Dodo was this gibor, this valiant warrior of David HaMelech. Va'acharov, and after him, there was another great warrior, Shama ben Ogei. Horari, the Shama ben Ogei from the mountain area. The Plishtim gathered together as an army. They gathered together in their camp. Some learn Lachayos, they were like animals. Now, this could have been their shock troops or their choice soldiers who are as dangerous as a wild beast. Or could be Lachayos is the name of a place. The Plishtim gathered Lachayos. They gathered together. There was a portion of the field that was full of lentils. And the people fled. They ran away. The Plishtim were there. Nobody put up a fight. They all went running. The Shama ben Ogei stood there within that portion of the field. And he saved it. And he struck the Plishtim. Vayas Hashem Teshua Gedolah, and again, Hashem did a great Yeshua. These warriors were mentioned, again, the first one, Adino Ha'etzni, the Gemara explains it's going on David HaMelech. Poshepshat, this was the name of one of his warriors. But the people that David HaMelech had with him were tremendous warriors in Bali Milchama. They were able to fight, they knew the strategy, they knew how to carry on a war. But they were also people that were with David, and they were like David. They were birds of a feather flocked together, kol of lemino yishkon, as Ben Sira says. They were like him. And his soldiers were motivated. Sometimes when a person has the conviction that he's fighting for Klal Yisrael, he's fighting for the honor of Hashem, it inspires him and it gives him the power to do superhuman deeds. And these were tremendous gevura that was displayed, and it was always clear, Vayas Hashem Tshua Gedola. It was being done through Hashem, it wasn't their own thing. It was clear that Hashem brought a salvation through these people. So this is the first three. Pashup Shat, the first one was this Yoshev Vasheves, Tach Kamoni, Adino Etzni is number one, Elazar ben Dodo is number two, and Shama ben Ogei is number three. And we're going to find throughout, there's the number three seems to come up. Shlosha, Shalishim. And the Mefarshim discuss, the Targum mentions a number of times, for instance, in Pasuk Ches, Rosh HaShalishi, the Targum explains not that he was the leader of the three, but Shalishi means the Giborusa, the mighty ones, the warriors. Like by in Parshas Mishalach, when we left Mitzrayim, it says Paro had his army, Vishalishi Malkulo. Shalishi didn't mean number three, Shalishi means the leaders. So it could be there were groups of three, could be Shalishi just means the leaders. There are different ways of understanding it. I saw one of the Mefarshim explains that they could be the leaders were always called Shalishim because the king was number one. If he wanted to have a viceroy, there'd be a special person who could be the Mishnah Lamelech, second to the king. That didn't normally, you didn't always have a second to the king. But sometimes the king appointed a second. All those under him who had the major leadership, if they weren't the second to the king, or the king didn't want to give him the title of a Mishnah Lamelech, they're number three. So the leaders were called Shalishim. These were the three leaders. Vayerdu and Pasuk Yud Gimel. Another incident. Vayerdu Shloshim Yashloshim Rosh. We'll see later, there were Shloshim, there were 30 leaders. We're going to get to later. And three of the 30 went down. Vayavo El Kotzir El David. They came during the harvest to David. El Moras Adulam, to the cave of Adulam, David HaMelech was in this place. V'chayas Plishtim, again there was this group of Plishti soldiers, Chone Be'emek Rafoim, that was in the valley. Plishtim soldiers were in the valley, David HaMelech was in the cave, it was the time of the harvest, and the Giboyrim came to David. But David Ozba Matsuda, could be the cave was situated on this mighty rock, it was like a fortress. David was in the fortress. Umatzav Plishtim, in the garrison of the Plishtim, Oz Beis Lechem, was in Beis Lechem. Beis Lechem, and we'll see in a moment Beis Lechem, which is where, that's David's hometown. That's where David HaMelech came from. Beis Lechem obviously had a Jewish population, but there was a Plishtim that had a garrison over there. They had their soldiers, and David HaMelech wasn't able to get into Beis Lechem. Vayis'av David. And David had a craving, he had a desire, by Yomar, and he said, Mi ashkeni mayim, if only somebody would give me to drink water, mi bor beslechem asher bashoar, from the bor, the well. Or we pronounce it not be'er, but as a bor, as a cistern. In other words, a bor can mean a place that gathers rainwater, and a be'er is more a natural spring. But David HaMelech said he wanted this water from the Bor Beis Lechem Asher Bashar, the water of Beis Lechem that's by the gate. Now the problem is there were Plishti soldiers there. Vayivku Shloshes Hagiborim. So three of the mighty soldiers broke through B'machne Plishtim into the Plishti camp. Vayishavu Maim, and they drew the water Mibor Beis Lechem Asher Bashar from this well that was by the gate. Vayisu vayoviu el David, and they lifted it up and they brought it to David. There are three great things here. First of all, there were three of them. There was only three warriors. And they were somehow able to break through the Plishti camp. That's one tremendous display of power. Second of all, they were able to draw the water. In other words, they must have put down their weapons. They must have been drawing water and to stop what they're doing, or at least one of them, or to get involved with drawing water under enemy fire, possibly, was also a tremendous sign of gevura. And the third thing is they were able to carry the water back to David. I would have imagined by the time they got back, the bucket would be empty. You know, running in the water, splashing all over. But they lifted it up, and they carried it to David. The Barbanel describes it like they lifted it up high, or as they went. Nobody started up with them. They were able to carry it by force, and the Plishtim left them alone. And they brought it to David. David HaMelech didn't want to drink the water. And he poured it out. He spilled out the water. He said, I'm pouring this out in honor of Hashem. Vayomer. And he said, Chalilali, it'd be mundane, it'd be a desecration. It'd be a desecration for me, Hashem, for me to do this. When I look at this bucket, I don't see H2O. I see blood of the people who went and they put their life on the line. I'm looking at a bucket that was bought at the expense of possible human life. The blood of the people who went b'nafshosam risking their life. V'lo'ovelishtosam. David HaMelech didn't want to drink that water. Eila osu shloshes ha'giborim. That's what these three giborim did. It's a little bit hard to understand exactly what happened. On the simple meaning, it means that they went to draw water and they risked their life and David didn't want to drink it. As one of the Meforshim explains, the hishtadlus tzricha lios lefi hatachlis. That's his words. The hishtadlus, the effort you make in something, has to be lefi hatachlis, based on the goal. I don't know if you would agree with my example, but I would think to myself, like a person on a regular day, if somebody's cooking supper for themselves on a regular weekday, and he spends an hour and a half or 2 hours preparing his supper. You know, in other words, I don't know, in other words, if it's just for him on a regular day, so don't spend 2 hours. Like, is the supper so important? Obviously, if you're preparing it for Shabbos, or you're preparing it for your spouse, or you're preparing it for some special occasion, so then you can spend 10 hours on the meal. It's a special thing. But like on a regular thing, like what's he spending so much effort on this? Here there were people who put a supreme effort for a cup of water. It's like David HaMelech would have said, you know, I wish I could drink Poland Spring. So people went ahead and they risked their life to get him that water. How could he drink such a thing? So he had to use that water and say, this water will be spilled out in honor of Hashem. And in honor of Hashem, no sacrifice is too much. Nothing's too much. If they risk their life, it certainly would be improper for me to drink it. I can drink the dirty water that we have over here. We don't have to use the water from Beis Lechem Asher Bashar. But the truth is, the Gemara is in Bava Kama on Daf Samach Amud Beis. Discusses, the Gemara is obviously bothered, there has to be something more. And on the simple meaning, it just seems so difficult to understand. The Meforshim do say that when David had that desire for water, he didn't mean that the people should go and get it. It was almost as if he was reminiscing about his youth and where he came from. Maybe he felt bad, he wanted to stress the fact that our Kaddish Baruch Hu should help, now we have the Plishtim here, and we can't even go back to the hometown. So the way of saying, I just wish we could have that water in Beis Lechem. I miss the way it used to be in my hometown, and now we got the Plishtim and we're stuck here. Maybe as if to say Hashem should help us, or just Chari Shemenu Kikedem. Things should be the way they used to be. I wish I had that water. That could be his part. And he certainly didn't mean for people to risk their life. But the Gemara says in Baba Kama, he had this desire for water. Water is Torah. And we know from yesterday's laning, Shoftim v'shotrim titan l'cha v'chol sharecha. The judges sat by the gate. And David needed the water, meaning there was a halacha that David HaMelech wanted to know. So if he wanted to know this halacha, he wanted the Torah, he wanted the water that came from the source near the gate. Somebody should go and ask the Sanhedrin. Ask a question. From the Beis Din. There were a number of questions that he had. Because we just had these strange stories with lentils in the fields, and the Plishtim wanted to, there was a field full of lentils, and everyone ran away. The Gemara learns what happened was, David HaMelech had a question. And the Gemara discusses different opinions what the question was. One question is, perhaps his men set fire to a field. And they would have to pay for the field. But in the field, there were hidden different implements. Things were hidden inside the field. What's called tamun ba'esh. If a fire burns down something, and there's items hidden inside, the Chachamim holds you don't have to pay for that. What's hidden inside the building, inside the Godish, you don't have to pay for. Inside the pile of grain. But that was David HaMelech's question. There was some type of field, and there was a battle, there must have been a fire. David HaMelech wants to know a halacha. Or perhaps there were Plishti soldiers hanging out. And he wanted to know, could he set fire? And then he's allowed to save himself at other people's expense. He shouldn't even have to pay for it. Now, since this is in times of war, he should be able to burn down the field and not pay for it. And the answer was, under normal circumstances, a person can't save himself at somebody else's expense. And if it's a case of pikuach nefesh and he does it, there's no other thing else to do, which he could do it then, but then he'll have to pay for it. Not as he can save himself, but he'll have to pay for it. Or perhaps he wanted to feed his men barley, because in Divrei HaYomim it tells over the story it was a field of barley. He wanted to give his animals barley, and then he was going to get the lentils from the plishtim and pay it back. But in short, he had some type of halacha question. And they came and they went and they asked the Sanhedrin and they risked their life. So David HaMelech said, you know, you don't risk your life for words of Torah. And therefore, we're not going to say over this Torah in your name. There are different ways of understanding the Gemara. What I said is very brief, and not every Mephorish, not all the commentators learn this way. But that's one way of understanding the Gemara. The Netziv learns that, as we're saying, that this is the Netziv learns that what happened was, if somebody is involved in learning, and he loses himself, he's somebody like Hillel, who goes to the roof to hear Torah. And he's so involved in it, he's not aware of the fact that it's snowing on him. And he almost was frozen to death. And they brought him down and they said it was pikuach nefesh. His life was in danger. That's allowed. And get involved in your learning. And if this person's so involved that he loses himself and he does something dangerous, so, but he did it because he was totally immersed in learning, that's okay. These three Giboyim were not yet immersed in learning. It was now they were making a rational decision. Should we risk our life to ask a Shiloh? And that was wrong. And therefore David didn't say over the Torah. He spilled out that water to Hashem, meaning that Torah will be said over in the Gemara, but we're not going to say who the names of these Giboyim are. We're not going to quote them by name, because they did the wrong thing by risking their life for this teaching. And one last comment on that. I saw a beautiful explanation. The Gemara seems to be totally different from the simple meaning. But if we remember what happened, David HaMelech, when he was younger, fled to Nov Ir HaKohanim, Nov, the city of the Kohanim. And when Shaul found out that the people gave him food and gave him his Goliath's sword, eventually Shaul had the whole city destroyed. David HaMelech learned his lesson. If he were to go and ask a question from the Sanhedrin, and come back with an answer, he'd put the Sanhedrin in danger. All those judges would be at risk of their life because they're helping David, they're guiding David what he should do. How can he have to do with David? Could be this was at a point in David's life where he was still running away from Shaul. He didn't want it to be known that he's asking a question to the Sanhedrin. So they almost had a code word. Go to Beis Lechem. Near the gate over there, there's water. Draw water from the well and bring back the water. And of course, while they were there, they spoke to the Sanhedrin. But anybody who would see these three Giboyim coming and then returning with water would probably figure the Giboyim wanted water. And that's the way it was recorded. But there was the deeper meaning, the Gemara saying, that David HaMelech didn't just want water, he really wanted to have the Torah lesson. Of course, when he realized that they had risked their life, he poured out that water, that Torah is not said over in their name. Pasuk Yud Ches. Avishai, Achi Yoav ben Tzruya. Avishai, the brother of Yoav ben Tzruya. Who Rosh HaShalosha? He was the head of another group of three. Or perhaps he was the head of the three that we just mentioned. It's not clear in the Pasuk which three he's the leader of. V'oras Chaniso. He would stir up his spear, Ashlosh Meos Chol, over 300 dead bodies. Meaning, he killed 300, and he was still full of strength that he was ready to continue the battle. He was Orer Chanisa. He stirred up his spear, in other words, he was ready to continue fighting. Below Shem Bashlosha. And he had a name. He was known among the first three. He wasn't on their level, but he was respectable. Even those first three Giboyrim that we mentioned, Adino Ho'etzni, Elazar ben Doda ben Achochi, and Shama ben Oge, he was known by them. From his group of three, he was the most prominent. And he was an officer. But he didn't reach the madrega, the level of the first three Giboyrim. Ben Yoyada was a valiant, brave person. Rav Pa'olim, with many deeds he had done. Mikavtzel, he gathered. Simple meaning is he came from a place called Kavtzel. But the Gemara learns that he gathered from all over. He gathered mitzvahs and he did great things. He struck the two commanders of Moab. The word Ariel could be like Ariel, lion. El means a strong one. Ariel is like the strong lion. It means the leaders. He went down and he struck the lion besoch habor. He went down into a pit and there was a lion there. The Yom HaShalach, it was a snowy day. Now, it's very hard for people to, you get kind of lethargic and frozen, and you can't really fight well when you're frozen. And he went into this boar, and it was a snowy day, and there was a lion. And he was like, him and the lion. There was nowhere to run. He went into the well, and there was a lion. I want to finish the perek. The truth is the Gemara discusses in Brachos exactly. Could be he went down and he either went and he was tovel in a mikvah and he broke through the ice to be tovel. Because otherwise, what's he doing in the boar in a snowy day? Or he learned the lion as he learned Torah's Kohanim. Sefer Vayikra is like right in the middle of the Torah. It's like in the pit, in the middle of the Torah, and it's very difficult, like a lion. The Gemara discusses how in spiritual matters this showed his prowess. V'uhigos ish mitri also hit an Egyptian. Ish mara, a person with an outstanding appearance. V'yana mitri chanis, and this Egyptian was holding a spear. V'yirilov v'ashovet, and v'yoven yoyoda went down with a stick. You have an Egyptian who's armed, and he comes down with a stick. But v'yigzos achanis miyana mitri, he was able to steal away the spear out of the hands of the mitri. And the Gemara learns out that gezeila, by definition, is when you grab something right from the other person. A ganef is a thief. A gazlan is a robber. He takes it like vayigzol sachanis. He stole the spear right out of his hand. Vayargeo bachanis, and he killed him with a spear. Eila osu ben yo ben yoyoda. This is what ben yo ben yoyoda did. Vloshem b'shlosh ha-giborim. He had a name among the three giborim. Min ha-shloshim nichbod. Among the 30, he was respectable. But again, he didn't reach the level of the first three. By Simeu David El Mishmato, David HaMelech gathered Binayo Ben Yoyoda to listen to him and to be one of his men. Asoel Achi Yoav Vashloshim. Asoel, the brother of Yoav, was one of the 30, or he was on the level of the 30. Elchanan Ben Dodo from Beis Lochem was one of them. Shama HaCharodi was one. Elika HaCharodi. Chelet HaPalti, Ira Venikish HaTekoi, these are cities, Tekoa and Pelet, Aviezer HaAnsosi came from Anosos, Mivunai HaChushosi, I'm reading each phrase as it's a separate person. Salmon HaAchochi was one warrior, Maharai HaNatofosi was another, Chelet Ben Bano HaNatofosi, there was Itai Ben Rivai who came, Migas, Migivas Ben Eben Yomin. There was Benayo HaPirothoni, he died, Nachle Goash. There was Avi Alvon, who Arvosi came from Arvos, and Asmoves Habar Chumi, El Yachba HaShalvoni, and Bnei Yoshein Yehonasan. The children of Yoshein, but it only mentions Yehonasan. That's one way to translate. Shama was HaHarori from the mountain area, Achiam Ben Shoror, Ho Arori, Eliphelet Ben Achazbai Ben Hamachosi, Eliam Ben Achitofel HaGiloni. We've talked about Achitofel. This Eliam ben Achisofel was his son. Hagiluni. Chetzrei HaKarmeli, Parai HaArbi. Yigo ben Nosan Mitzova, Boni HaGodi. Tzela Kuamoni, Nachrei HaBeirosi. Nosei, he carried the weapons. Nosei Klei Yoav ben Sriya, he carried the weapons of Yoav. Ira HaYisri, Gorev HaYisri, Uriyo HaChiti, Kol Shloshim V'Shiva. These are 37 Giboyrim of David HaMelech. 37, some Meforshim say, the number is there were three Giboyrim mentioned first. Then we have the three Giboyrim who brought him back the water from Beis Lechem. That gives you six. And then there was Asoel. His counts as one. Okay, woman. Let's see.